I'm Mindy Todd. Welcome to The Point. Across the country, adults with autism face difficulties finding housing, often languishing on waiting lists for years. It's estimated that up to 500,000 children with autism will reach adulthood in this next decade. Statistics show 90% of adults with autism are not employed full-time, and more than 80% of young adults live in the family home. Finding workable solutions is becoming more and more of a challenge. Today, we talk about efforts to create more options. Here on Cape Cod, a group of parents got together to form the nonprofit Cape Cod Village, which hopes to create a campus-style residential community for adults with autism. And joining us to talk about that is Lauren Jones, who co-founded Cape Cod Village with her husband, Bob. Good morning, Lauren.
Good morning, Mindy.
Giselle Gauthier, who's a Cape Cod Village administrative consultant. Good morning, Giselle.
Good morning.
And in studio in Boston is Catherine Boyle, president of Autism Housing Pathways. Good morning, Kathy.
Good morning.
And on the phone, Leslie Long, director of adult services at Autism Speaks. Good morning, Leslie.
Good morning.
Catherine, why don't you tell us what Autism Housing Pathways, about your organization, for folks who aren't familiar with it?
We're a family-driven organization. We were founded 4 years ago. It's by families, for families. And we work with families to figure out what existing housing options might meet their child's needs. And we work with families to try to innovate new options. We have discussions with state government to try to relieve some of the roadblocks, and we work with providers to improve training of direct care staff.
And Leslie, tell us about Autism Speaks.
So Autism Speaks is a national organization that we're actually global, that's dedicated to look at research into the causes and treatments for autism. We also strive for public awareness and how family services can affect the family, society, working together, really so that we can commit to interventions and services and supports for all people with autism and their family.
Mm-hmm. Before we get into the details about Cape Cod Village, Lauren, when you talk to parents whose children have autism, one of the biggest concerns, the question that you always hear is, what's going to happen to my child when I'm gone? It's a scary feeling.
Well, thank you so much for having us, Mindy. The future is frightening. We all have really advocated for our children. They've been through the educational system. They've learned a lot of skills. And all of a sudden, at age 22, they're sort of let out into the world. And the future is extremely frightening for all of us parents. Mm-hmm. And we know that the quality of really good housing options is extremely limited. And that's what's really motivated my husband and I to start Cape Cod Village in 2011. Because if we don't do it and we're not the trailblazers, we can't wait for someone else to come up with the idea.
Catherine, give us a sense of the need. We've been seeing numbers of young children with autism growing in our school systems, and we hear a lot about that. And then that you would think that would give us some kind of an indication of how many of these children may be needing services when they become adults.
That's really the best way, is to extrapolate from the student numbers. Currently, we don't know how many individuals in Massachusetts have autism. The Department of Public Health does not keep records, and the Department of Developmental Services does not keep records by diagnosis, although that may be changing. What we do know is that based on the October 1st headcount numbers, that over the next 20 years, we should have 12,000 students with autism currently tracked by the public school system who will be reaching adulthood. Only about 15 to 20% of those will get residential services through the Department of Developmental Services when they turn 22, or will be able to support themselves and afford housing on the open market. We're looking at 80 to 85% who will not fit in either of those categories. Mm.
Leslie, on the national level, how do we figure out these numbers? Are we guessing, estimating? How do we know what kinds of numbers we're working with?
We are estimating, and I think, as Catherine indicated, the best way to look at it is the kids that are aging out and how the school system records people with autism and developmental disabilities. As Catherine indicated as well, most organizations, most adult services, don't track based on diagnosis, so we don't know how many adults there are with autism exactly. And we estimate across the country there over the next 10 years will be 500,000 adults with autism. Mm-hmm. So we're talking about a huge increase of kids aging into the adult system over the next 10 years.
Yeah, let's talk about, because people may, what do they mean aging into the system? And Lauren, the services that are available while your child is in school changes when they reach 22. So tell us what happens in the school years and then what you're facing at age 22.
Well, in the school years from age 3 to 22, public schools are responsible for developing an individual education plan and teaching skills, activities of daily living. And it's in preparation for trying to get your child to be as independent as possible once they reach adulthood. What we found with our son and the staff at his group home on the Cape are extremely well-meaning, but they're not trained in autism. And we've seen a lot of regression in his basic skills of dressing, taking care of himself, because the staff basically do these things for him, as opposed to when he was in the educational system where they were teaching. So we've seen a tremendous amount of regression and sort of more dependent behavior. He's lost ground.
Yeah, and how old is Alexander?
Alexander's 25.
25. Catherine, is this a comment you hear a lot from parents? Is that a concern a lot of parents have?
Yes, it's a huge problem. There are several reasons behind this. One is that because adult services are not an entitlement, they're subject to appropriation by the legislature. Department of Developmental Services is trying to spread money very thinly because they don't really have many other options. And part of the difficulty is that Medicaid will not reimburse service providers for training time, only for time spent with clients. And therefore, you know, these providers are operating on razor-thin budgets, and coming up with training is a real difficulty.
So we have also families caught in this dilemma of wanting to get their kids into as independent living situation as they can and being able to afford that. Catherine, why don't you jump in there?
Yes. It's inordinately expensive. If you are not receiving services, residential services through the state, if you're out there trying to do it on your own, there are a number of groups of families that have done this. If you have a reasonably independent child, you're still looking at services that are going to – rent and services will cost around $2,800 a month. And clearly that puts the vast majority of families out of that league. And, you know, I talk to many, many parents who say, you know, I just pray something happens when I die or when I can't mm-hmm. take care of him. It's a homelessness problem waiting to happen.
Yeah. Mm. Leslie, do you want to?
Yeah, I just wanted to also add, you know, Autism Speaks commissioned a survey around the country, and we got over 10,000 respondents, families, individuals on the spectrum, and one of their top concerns was being in a home, an independent home or group home or whatever their choice, and being treated with dignity and respect, having caregivers that are trained. We do see this as a top concern that, unfortunately, there are no requirements to be trained to support an adult with autism. And that's pretty common across the country, unfortunately. So we are not recruiting career members into our field. We have people that are there just for a job. Unfortunately, a lot of times it's a low-paying job. They're not trained well. So this just adds to the concerns that parents have, and as Lauren was indicating, you know, we want our son or daughter to thrive and have a quality of life that anyone would want, and we're left with trying to figure out services on our own for a better quality, or we can choose something that exists that may not be suited for our son or daughter.
Yeah. Leslie, I imagine there's some efforts legislatively to try to address some of these issues.
Yes, I think one of the greatest pieces of legislation that is coming forward is on Tuesday, and I think Catherine helped to really push that forward, and we're excited about the legislation in Massachusetts that really looks at creating tax credits and really incentives for developers as well as families. But this is a problem. It is across the country. It's very common that a lot of efforts have to be on either a state level or even a local level. So what we're trying to do is educate governors, commissioners, on what the problem is around the country. Federally, we do have efforts like the Combating Autism Act, the ABLE Act. We have efforts working with Health and Human Services and Centers for Medicaid. But what it comes down to is what we're seeing in Massachusetts with the bill that's coming up on Tuesday. Things have to happen on a state level, a local level, because it's all in the details, and the state folks and the advocates and the families really know what's happening in that state and what's needed. They know whether tax credits are needed, more developments needed, more money into the Medicaid system. So we are trying on a national level to help lift that voice so people know what's going on the ground.
Right. Catherine, tell us about this legislation.
Well, the bill is H3364. It's sponsored by Representative Lewis of Winchester, and it's coming up for a hearing on Tuesday with the Housing Committee. The bill would do four things. First, it would allow families to create housing savings accounts similar to 529 college savings accounts with state tax advantages, and it's modeled after the original 529 plan out of Michigan, and so hopefully it would be easy to, or relatively easy, to get federal tax, favorable federal tax treatment as well. The second element of the bill, as Leslie referred to, would change the way the state's individual development account program is financed. Right now, it's financed through a line item in the budget, and you know, budgets being what they've been the last 5 to 8 years, it peaked at about $700,000 in 2008, but last year it was only funded at $50,000.
Wow.
And so what the bill would do is instead finance the IDA program through tax credits. Oregon has done this and has been very successful. They've been able to finance their IDA program for the last few years at $10 million a year. The other two elements of the bill are very Massachusetts specific. One would allow what amounts to supported housing, where to count towards the support, the affordable housing inventory that each community needs to have. Communities are trying to get up to 10% of their housing stock be affordable. Right now, DDS and DMH licensed group homes automatically count as affordable housing, with one bedroom equals one affordable unit. But that is not true at all if services are funded through MassHealth, for instance. Mm. And this would change that. And the final would put housing developments for clients of DDS and the Department of Mental Health on a level playing field with developments for other populations with disabilities in terms of being eligible for funding through the Housing Innovations Fund under the Community Economic Development program.
We are talking about young adults with autism and housing. 866-999-4626 is our toll-free number if you'd like to join our conversation. 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. We'll talk more after a quick break. You're listening to The Point. We're talking about adults with autism and housing challenges with Lauren Jones, co-founder of Cape Cod Village, Giselle Gauthier, Cape Cod Village administrative consultant, Catherine Boyle, president of Autism Housing Pathways, and Leslie Long, director of adult services at Autism Speaks. Let's talk about Cape Cod Village, Lauren. This was an idea, as you mentioned, you and your husband, Bob, trying to figure out what you're going to do with your son. So where did this idea come from, and then how did you get other parents involved?
Well, I think autism as a diagnosis is an isolating disorder. These are individuals who have difficulty with communication and social skills. And so you already have a vulnerable group that's isolated. Mm-hmm. The current group homes that we've seen also tend to be isolated. They may be nice houses in nice neighborhoods, but they're essentially not integrated into the community. And the folks that live there and the staff basically don't get out into the community the way we'd like to see our son. So developing a model that is a campus-style community where there would be 16 folks with autism and a commons building. The commons building would serve both the individuals living there as well as have a big community component where we'd offer support groups to individuals and families with autism, hopefully become a training center for those working with autism, and really find a way for it to be a community within the larger community and have a big integrative component.
Right. So does the model, is it modeled after something that already exists, or is this something that you as a group came up with?
We have some good friends in Sonoma, California, who opened their doors just about a year ago. Their name is Sweetwater Spectrum, a nonprofit started by other parents. And they got some land actually in downtown Sonoma, of all places, and have built four houses serving 16 folks with a community building, a pool, farming. So they were our original model. They, fortunately for them, were able to start with a lot of folks who were able to donate a tremendous amount of money to get them off the ground. And we sort of see Sweetwater Spectrum as the Mercedes and Cape Cod Village. We want to be like the Toyota.
Right. Giselle, talk
Camry.
About the, talk about the funding for this.
Well, this will be funded from the capital side, from the development side, by a capital campaign is probably our largest funding source. But we will also be making fun of some of the state funding sources that Catherine Long mentioned, Housing Innovations Fund and other sources at the state level. And as Catherine mentioned, you know, it's really attractive to towns to have a project like this because residents that are supported by DDS, it counts as one bedroom, counts as one unit. And so suddenly we have 16 units. And for some towns, that really is a big boost to their affordable housing inventory. So it will be an important piece.
So where is this going to be? Have we found a location?
Well, we are
close.
Yeah, we're very close to finding a location. We'll probably be closing on a deal. It's going to be in the mid to lower Cape is the piece of property that we're working on right now. And we should have a signed P&S by the end of this month, which will be very exciting. And then we'll be able to talk about it a little bit more. But we're pretty excited about it. And it really is in a village center where the people that are living at the village will be able to walk out into the community and shop and possibly get jobs and get a cup of coffee and just be part of the community.
Right. So, Lauren, what's been the biggest challenge in this so far?
I would probably say developing a plan around funding. It always comes down to money.
Yeah.
I mean, we intend to probably serve some of the more severely involved adults with autism. They will come with funding from the Department of Developmental Services. But I think in this day and age, coming up with the financing to really develop a quality place and sustain it, we want to develop an endowment. That's the challenge.
Yeah. Yeah. That was going to be my question. How do you sustain it once it's built?
Well, there's a couple of different resources for that. Most of the people who live there are on SSDI. And so a certain portion of their SSDI will go towards paying for residential services, their food, their quote-unquote rent, the utilities and that sort of thing. And then DDS funding. All of these clients will come with DDS funding, and that will help to fund the larger operational budget.
Lauren, you mentioned that you're going to be serving some of the more severe cases, but who would qualify? I mean, we can see from this there's a big need. There's a lot of people who could probably fill those 16 spots in a second. So how are you going to determine who qualifies?
Well, you would obviously have to have a diagnosis of autism. You would have to come with funding either through Department of Developmental Services or some independent source of money. And then we will be developing a pretty extensive assessment and interview to see what kind of combination of folks will best be suited. And I know that Department of Developmental Services does provide additional funding for those who have greater needs. But we have a program committee that's just forming.
So one of the goals, as you mentioned, is integration with the larger community. So what are you envisioning here? What is that integration?
Well, we'll have the 16 folks that live there. We plan to have a tremendous involvement with families. That'll be part of the expectations. It's not just that they sort of drop their child off and wave goodbye. We envision in the community center maybe once a month community musicians who come in and play, cooking classes, art classes, developing really a pretty extensive volunteer component with people in the larger community.
Yeah. Catherine and Leslie, I want to ask you both this question. Certainly, there are other parents looking for creative ways to find affordable housing for their children, as Lauren and Bob Jones have done. Do you hear about other projects similar to this?
Yeah, there are quite a few. I think, you know, what started as a system where executive directors were hired and created housing for people with disabilities, that system has grown and is almost tapped out, where every provider that started years ago doesn't have space to really bring on more adults in the system. And I think it created what we see Lauren and Bob did around the country, where parents are taking it on themselves. They're becoming executive directors of collaboratives across the country. So this is beginning to happen in many states. We see there was a huge effort in New Jersey by the executive director of United Way of Bergen County, who started talking to mayors about the individuals that were in their towns growing up, staying in their towns, being able to live in their towns and work in their towns as adults. We're seeing it in, there's a whole group of parents that belong to organizations that have started agricultural communities, farmsteads, similar to the concept of Sweetwater Spectrum and Cape Cod Village, but a working farm. Some are not a working farm. They just look like a farm. Some are in Arizona. There's an apartment complex that's building called First Place for Adults with Autism attached to a leadership academy. So the quick answer is yes, this is happening across the country. The dilemma, as you heard from Cape Cod Village, is providing those services and supports. Across the country, there are 300,000 people on a waiting list for Medicaid waiver services, services to help them stay independent in the community. And that's all people with developmental disabilities. When we did our housing survey across the country, we found that most people are not even on a waiting list for services. So 300,000 is a huge underrepresentation. And we do need spirited collaboration like we're seeing with Cape Cod Village, but as you heard, 16. And we're so happy for the 16 people that are going to live there that, you know, same with Sweetwater, 16. But we're talking about hundreds of thousands of people across the country. So not only do we need families doing what Lauren and Bob are doing, but we really need a national strategy and a state-level strategy to reconcile this huge incoming wave of adults.
Yeah, that was my question. What are you going to do, right? Go ahead, Lauren.
If I could jump in there a second. Scalability is really a huge issue. You know, again, it's fantastic for those 16, but Massachusetts is looking at probably 250 a year turning 22 over the next every year for the next 20 years. And, you know, again, most people are not going to have that funding from the state. I think you have to segment it to some extent. What we're trying to do is get to the point where we can say to families that come in our door, tell us about your child, tell us about your personal resource situation, and here's a matrix. Where, you know, we can look at it and say, okay, here is an option that might meet your situation. Here are entitlement dollars you might be able to tap into, and you can combine it with your personal resources. The problem right now is even when you create that matrix, there are holes in it. There are profiles that just aren't workable unless some things change on the state and national level.
I guess one of the other things I wanted to say about our development at Cape Cod Village is we feel very strongly that this would be a pilot project that would be replicated not just around New England, but around the country. Mm-hmm. And we understand that serving 16 people is only a drop in the bucket.
Right.
And we hope to expand the concept of a campus-style housing for adults with autism so that it could be replicated many, many times.
Right. Catherine, when Lauren's talking about this serving a more severe community, some of those cases that are higher functioning, that you know, are borderline for some of these services, there's another area that you can understand families' frustrations on what can they do.
And that's a huge problem. That's frankly is the one that really keeps me up at night. Again, if you look at that 80 to 85% who aren't going to qualify for funding through the Department of Developmental Services and won't be able to work, full time and therefore be able to afford housing, about half of that group is really eligible for nothing more than SSI or SSDI. And a Section 8 housing voucher. But the waiting list for housing vouchers is 10 to 12 years at this point.
Wow.
Frankly, for that upper end, we need several things. I think we need to change the Massachusetts Medicaid state plan so that there are some additional dollars for those folks. A lot of those folks, what they really need is a housing voucher and they need life coaching, which mm-hmm. costs about $100 an hour for about an hour a week. And we really need to get those folks jobs. A lot of them are quite capable of working, but as a society, we've got to be more open to having coworkers who look a little different and act a little mm-hmm. different.
Yeah, Leslie, this is a perfect opportunity for you to tell us about the trip you just did. And was it 9 cities and talking to businesses about this very issue of jobs?
Yeah, we, just like Lauren and Bob, created this incredible vision of housing and are taking that on. We have families that were very interested in employment opportunities for their sons or daughters, or people themselves on the spectrum that were really not fitting into the mainstream work culture but had a skill or an interest that they really wanted to pursue. So we looked around the country in partnership with a group called Extraordinary Ventures in North Carolina. We looked around for small businesses that were owned or operated by a person with autism or their family member. And we found an incredible community throughout the country of families that have found a business niche that tapped into their son or daughter's vocational skill and created a business around that. And what that business did for the individual was not only gave them an income and a value to the community, but it then began to help on their housing front. So, for example, and I think the callers may know this particular person, but Joe Steffi of Pop and Joe's Kettle Corn. Joe was, every IEP he ever had said he was not going to stay in school and he was a behavioral issue, needed a communication device and all these negative things. And Joe really loved making kettle corn, really pushing the corn in the hot kettle, and it was a real value, and he helped get his motivation into it. He created a business with his parents' help on kettle corn, and he packages it. It's in supermarkets, makes more money than most of his any caregiver that would support him. Mm. But he is living independently in his home and has a great life, just takes vacation. The community knows him, supports him, legislators know him. And that's one example of a gentleman who actually owns his own business. And his parents are getting older, so obviously they need to go to the next step. What's going to happen as him as a business owner?
Mm-hmm.
But they just figured it out, and they figured it out well, and they had they did all the right things. And it became a model, just as Lauren and Bob are talking about, wanting to replicate and really help others. We found a car wash business. We found bakery businesses, a biscotti business, and, in fact, I was just talking to a large company in New York that said, we do a breakfast on Autism Awareness Month every April. Get us as many biscotti. We'll buy the biscottis. Hmm. And those types of opportunities where people have a value and a skill, everybody has a skill, everybody has a value. What can they do to turn it into a vocational opportunity? And again, we see reports that also then creates people's ability to help pay towards their housing, and really their skills increase. And the regression that, unfortunately, Lauren and Bob talked about with their son, we see that change, that they actually become mature and their skills increase. So the job market and the employment piece is a huge value. Will it solve the housing piece? No. But can it add to the possibility of housing as an option in the place that somebody wants to live? Absolutely.
Yeah. Lauren, you wanted to add something?
Based on what Leslie is saying, I did read an article a couple months ago about a parent in Florida who had a car wash and is just employing adults with autism, which, of course, was very near and dear to my heart because Alexander, our 25-year-old, is obsessed, lives and breathes everything car wash. So I've asked my husband if he might want to buy a car wash somewhere on the Cape, and he hasn't committed to that yet. Yeah, but yeah. But because of so many folks with autism, their intense, obsessional, focused interest, you know, how do we capitalize on that?
And they become experts in some of these areas.
Absolutely.
That's what you're saying, Leslie. Let's try to make that some kind of a vocation.
Absolutely. Yeah. We summed up the report, and we put the businesses on our website. So parents like Lauren can reach out to the owners of that business. That's Rising Tide Car Wash, which is winning all kinds of awards. Mm-hmm. But Leah Marie's Bakery, for, you know, there's so many people that love baked goods, or baking, I should say. But these are products that are amazing. We found Arthur and Friends, which is in South Jersey, who does hydroponic farming, mm-hmm. which is selling to the high-end restaurants in New York, these incredible arugula and plants that are just amazing. They're making enough money when they sell to the high-end restaurants that they can bring produce to Jersey City and kids in the inner city that wouldn't traditionally have fresh products and fresh produce are able to partake in that. Mm-hmm. They're also creating housing around that, where they're creating a hydroponic farm at the top of an inner city building. Mm-hmm. I mean, creative ideas like that. And we need to connect with each other, and that's one of the things that Autism Speaks does, is try and connect families around the country that are doing creative things to really learn from each other and replicate, because it is really hard to do it yourself. Mm-hmm. And it's a full-time job, and Lauren and Bob are engaged in a full-time job that 20 years ago an executive director would be paid a salary to do and have staff doing with them. Mm-hmm. So, you know, families are really warriors in this and paving the way, and it is really hard. You know, I've had a lot of families say to me, I don't want to be the mm-hmm. warrior. I don't want to be. I want somebody else to do, because yeah. they're tired.
I was going
to
say, you're tired, yeah. yeah.
They've been through the IEPs. They've been through the IHPs. They've been through Medicaid. They've been, you know, somebody help me here. But the fact of the matter is, the person that cares most about your son or daughter is you, and you're going to create the quality. And so mm-hmm. families are really taking charge, as well as adults themselves. They're creating the quality programs that 20 years from now people are going to replicate. And so it's just amazing what families are doing. But we do need to help, and that's why we do have these things online. I also want to mention that for training, there is an online training to train people to work with adults with autism. And, you know, we'd rather have it in person and people get trained in the home and in the classroom. But we also know there are people that live in Tennessee that may not have access to a residential program. So there is an online residential curriculum that was created by adults with autism themselves at the Autistic Global Institute. So we do have to start sharing and doing mm-hmm. it through the Internet and doing it through technology, because that's how we're going to start reaching all the families we need to reach.
And we've got links up on our website to everybody's website, so that people can just go right to capeandislands.org and on the point, you'll find these links. We are talking about adults with autism and housing challenges. 866-999-4626 is our toll-free number. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address, thepoint@capeandislands.org. We'll talk more after a quick break. You're listening to The Point. We are talking about adults with autism and housing challenges with Lauren Jones, co-founder of Cape Cod Village, Giselle Gauthier, Cape Cod Village administrative consultant, Catherine Boyle, president of Autism Housing Pathways, and Leslie Long, director of adult services at Autism Speaks. Catherine, were you trying to jump in there before the break?
Yeah, I was just going to say that I want to underscore what Leslie's saying about the importance of family-driven initiatives. Despite what I said earlier about scalability and 16 is a small number, every effort like this both creates something that is potentially replicable. But beyond that, 16 individuals are going to be housed here. But I'm sure not all 16 of those families are as actively involved in the process as Lauren and Bob are. So the efforts of these individual parents who really rise up creates slots for individuals whose families are not able to be as involved.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What advice would you give to parents of teenagers who are approaching the age of 22? You were talking about they get to age 22, all those services that they were getting through the public school system go away, and you have to try to find the services and, maybe housing, whatever needs might be. So you don't want to start at 22, right?
No.
Yeah, go ahead, Leslie, jump in
there.
That's
an easy one. And I mentioned this because this is free and available to any family. Autism Speaks has a transition toolkit that any family can request, and it is particular to your state. We personalize it to your state, but it allows for families to understand each step, and individuals with autism, each step of the process that they can start at 14, looking and thinking about, the whole point of the transition law. And I do want to say that IDEA, Individuals with Disabilities Education Act, was started because of parents like Catherine and Lauren and Bob. So imagine what we can do. It is absolutely within our reach that parent-driven initiatives change the system. But the transition toolkit will talk about what should you be looking at, who should you be contacting, and a step-by-step process, because each state has its version of DDS, but you have to contact multiple agencies, and it is navigating a whole new system. So you want to start young, 14, looking at opportunities for internships and jobs, looking at what the housing, if it's 10 to 15 year waiting list, what do I have to get on now? What do I have to start doing? So that would be my recommendation, certainly get a hold of the transition toolkit and really start creating your plans as early as possible.
Catherine, you want to add?
Massachusetts. Yes, in Massachusetts, we have on our website something called a Turning 18 checklist, which walks people through all of the agencies they need to look at, the things they need to apply for. Beyond that, absolutely, start at 14. You really want to look at making sure daily living skills are addressed in your child's IEP. Mm-hmm. If you are not one of the ones who is going to be served by DDS, the important thing to remember is that the more skills your child has, the cheaper supports are. And for parents of even younger children, it's never too early to start saving money. Mm-hmm. Even though you don't have right now the tax-advantaged vehicles like a 529 college savings account, you really need to save that money and save it gradually. I run far too many workshops where I see people come in the door who have 18, 19, 20-year-olds, and they realize how much money is involved, and they gasp. Mm-hmm. And it wouldn't have been nearly as challenging had they known, 10, 15 years earlier. Get grandparents involved. I don't know about everyone else's child with autism, but my child with autism likes cheap STEM toys. He doesn't need the really expensive birthday presents. It's more important if the grandparents really want to chip in, put some money aside, so long as it's not in the child's name. Mm-hmm. We run a series of we have a two-hour workshop that will take anywhere in the state for families. That's sort of a getting your feet housing 101, getting your feet wet housing 101 presentation. And we also run day-long workshops on housing for people who are really at the point where they're starting to get serious about things.
Yeah. Leslie, how does Massachusetts compare to the rest of the country?
Massachusetts has a very educated parent base. Besides, they dealt with the health insurance issue very early on and is much more maternal than other states. I think Massachusetts is going to be one of those pilot states that really helps other states replicate and understand. With the exception of California, which does have an entitlement from birth to death that is very rare, not a great entitlement, but an entitlement. I think Massachusetts has the opportunity with some of the work that Catherine's been doing on the legislation and Lauren and Bob are creating. I think Massachusetts could be a leader, and I hope that they are, and I think they're going to be.
Yeah. One of the things, Catherine, I'm thinking, now my daughter does not have autism, but she's developmentally delayed, and her teacher in high school, her teacher was such a resource, and I would imagine that's something that you and other groups deal a lot with, is educating the special needs teachers as to what's available, what's out there. If she didn't tell me at 17, you need to get working on this now, we would have been in a rough shape at age 22.
And that's a huge issue. Is a lot of the time, you know, some teachers are very well educated about what the issues are. Many are not. The same is true of special education departments, and there's a real problem with silos. Mass Health may know their own options extremely well, but they don't necessarily know what DDS has to offer and vice versa. And so, you know, at the moment, there's still this issue of getting to the point where there's no wrong door, that families find out what their options are. One of the things that horrifies me is when I meet people who have kids who are 26, 28 years old, and they don't know what a Section 8 housing voucher is. Mm-hmm. And they needed to get on the waiting list, you know, really the day their child turned 18.
Yeah.
So part of the issue is going to be educating the gatekeepers as well as educating the families.
When we're looking at the options, I guess, it, as you mentioned earlier, differs from state to state. So for services in Massachusetts, they would include adult foster care, adult family care, group adult foster care, personal care attendant services. Tell us about those.
Well, those are all what are called Medicaid state plan services. There's a lot of people tend to hear about Medicaid waivers quite a bit, but there's less discussion of Medicaid state plan services. Personally, I'm a fan of Medicaid state plan services because they are an entitlement. Unlike waiver services, they cannot be capped, and they are not allowed to have waiting lists. If you're eligible, you can get it. Now, the downside of state plan services, of course, is there's not nearly as much money per person involved as in a waiver. But for people who aren't going to be served by DDS, who aren't going to at 22, state plan services are really the only game in town. And so in terms of what they are, personal care attendant services pays for an individual to come to help at discrete times during the day to help with specific things. Their PCA is used mostly by people with physical disabilities because it's good for someone who doesn't need constant supervision but needs, for instance, help transitioning out of a wheelchair, transferring out of a wheelchair into a bed or into a shower or something like that. Adult foster care and adult family care are two sides of the same coin. They are the same program. If the caregiver is a family member, it's called adult family care. If the caregiver is not, it's called adult foster care. And it pays a stipend, tax-free stipend, to an individual who lives with the person with a disability, either in the home of the person with a disability or in the home of the caregiver. And it's not a large stipend, but it is definitely something for people who need level one care, which is assistance with one or more activities of daily living. The stipend is about $8,000 a year. Mm-hmm. And for level two, it's about twice that. It's about $19,000 a year. Level two is you need assistance with two or more activities plus a behavior or three or more activities. Mm-hmm. And level two has to be hands-on physical assistance. Mm-hmm. So that's adult family care, adult foster care. Group adult foster care can be used in one of two settings. It can be used either in subsidized housing or in licensed assisted living. And it is the same criteria as adult foster care or adult family care. You need assistance with one or more activities of daily living. It pays an amount to the provider organization that's about halfway between AFC level 1 and AFC level 2.
So when you're talking about eligibility, then it depends on the severity of your disability then.
Correct. And you apply through MassHealth. And what MassHealth will do is they will – if you call MassHealth and you say, I'm looking for an adult foster care or adult family care agency in my area, they'll direct you to that agency. And the agency does the assessment.
Gotcha.
And determines whether or not you're eligible. One thing that's really important for parents to think about is really how independent is your child. A lot of people will say – oh, my child is independent at showering. But the question is, really? Are you adjusting the water temperature? Do you have to stick your head in the door and say, did you remember to wash your hair? Mm-hmm. Do you have to say, rinse your hair? Do you have to give any assistance with shaving? When you ask people very specific questions like that, a lot of them realize that their child is eligible for programs that they didn't think they were eligible for.
Yeah, that's a really good point. Leslie, we were talking yesterday, and we were talking about support services and how they vary from state to state. And what did you tell me about Connecticut?
In Connecticut, there seems to be a real crisis around housing supports through their Medicaid waiver. And we could see that in a lot of states, as I indicated before, 300,000 at least. But unfortunately, there is a letter that's coming from the commissioner indicating that there is very little opportunity for residential supports. So I've had calls from families really in a state of panic, saying, you know, this is sort of the first they're really learning about the fact that there is limited housing supports available from the state unless somebody passes away on that waiting list or coming out of an institution. And, you know, while I give credit to the state for being honest with families and saying this is happening, because we don't tell enough about what the real concerns are, a crisis, it also leaves families going, well, what do I do? What can I do? So I think we have to handle it in both ways. Setting out the information and being honest with families about what's going on, I think, is a great step. But the other end of it is, okay, now how do we solve the problem?
Yeah.
So it was one of the first letters that I've seen from a state outlining the real problem. But again, what are we going to do about that? I just want to mention, too, I think listening to Kathy and knowing what Lauren and Bob went through and other families gone through, how important it is during those transition years to hear what Kathy's saying.
Mm-hmm.
You know, most families having to hear, you need to understand adult foster care or whether it's subsidized housing, or it is so overwhelming.
Right.
To us, it's just, you know, it's what we do on a daily basis to figure this out. But for families, this really needs to be discussed when somebody's in their transition years of high school. Who do I call? How do I start figuring out what level my child is
exactly.
at?
Exactly.
All right. A lot for parents when they're...
Yeah, Leslie Long, Director of Adult Services at Autism Speaks. Catherine Boyle, President of Autism Housing Pathways. Giselle Gauthier, Cape Cod Village Administrative Consultant. Lauren Jones, co-founder of Cape Cod Village. Thank you all for being here. Really appreciate your time today.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
And I want to thank John Parker and Tom Devlin for production assistance in Boston. I'm Indy Todd. Thank you for listening.
Amy Vins produces The Point with assistance from Jenny Junker. The executive producer is Mindy Todd. Music by Benjamin Verdery and William Coulter. The Point is a production of the Cape and Islands NPR stations, a service of WGBH.